We are going to talk with Barbara Dooley here in 1 second. But, Mike, you never know when you're going to run into listeners of this show. And today, Orn, who was our engineer, his wife got a flat. And the guys that came to fix the flat are huge Dukes and Bell fans. They are Thomas and Damon, and they helped her out. And I just want to give them a shout-out because apparently they made the connection, and they were like, oh, man, we listen every day.
Hey, way to go, because I got to be honest. I see somebody with a flat in the rain.
Oh, that's not right.
Well, I'm being honest. I'm not pulling over, but that's good for you guys, man. There are some good people out there in Atlanta right now.
Thomas and Damon, thank you guys for being listeners to Dukes and Bell and Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk some dogs. Barbara, this is
good afternoon.
This is a big one. We're good. I'm like the tension is building, right? I mean, we know this is a big one. We had a week off last week, but so did Alabama. Tell me what's your initial thoughts heading into Saturday night?
I want to jump in the bed and put the covers over my head and say, "Wake me when it's over." It's going to be a barn burner.
Yeah.
It's going to be the kind of game that you really want to happen and then you really don't want it to happen.
Right.
And I've been through a lot of those games. But as I was getting ready for this show and I start thinking about it on Tuesdays, I thought, really and truly, I wanted to ask you, do you think Georgia has in their mind, is it a Nick Saban thing or is it an Alabama thing?
It's a great question.
Because we go to Alabama and just collapse. You think it's Saban or do you think it's Alabama?
I think it's a bit of Nick Saban's team being able to handle some of the bigger moments better than maybe Kirby's teams did. I know early on, I mean, remember Kirby got thrown into it in just his second year at head coach and, you know, a couple plays here and there. You know that, oh, the Carl, that long, oh, that conversion. Don't get me, I know it's bad memories for Georgia fans, Barbara. But I do think, you know, Ding Dong, the witch is dead, and it's a whole new dude with Kalen DeBoer, and maybe Kirby can start something of his own and the other way with a win streak.
Well, I hope so, but I started thinking about the bottom line is that Bama has always been a team that's been in our hair. Mm. And I remember when we came in 1964, our first game was with Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And we just knew we were going to beat Coach Bryant, just knew we were. And, I mean, I'm 23, Vince is, what, 30, 31, something like that, and we've got all these big ideas. We're just going to go to Alabama. And it was the first game of his head coaching career. And it was in Tuscaloosa. And I had three little children under three, so I couldn't go. And I listened to the radio and they beat us. I think it was 30-3 or 33-3 or they killed us. And I went to bed.
31-3, Barbara, 31-3.
31-3. Okay. It's still a bad score, right?
Yep.
Any way you look at it. So he walked in. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning when he got home. And I heard him come in the bedroom. And I said, I didn't know what to say, except, how did it go? He went, how did it go? He said, I got my you-know-what whip. And I said, well, we'll get them next year. Well, the next year came, 1965, and that was the year that Georgia people still talk about today. You probably were not even born in 65.
Nope.
But that was the famous flea flicker play. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Well, that's amazing. Well, Vince grew up in Mobile and played football, basketball, everything in the streets. At least that was the story he told me. Well, this particular year, Alabama was they were the national champions in 65. So we were trailing with time running out. I think it was 17-10, and he called the flea flicker, and it was a trick play that he had learned playing on the streets of Mobile. And the play called for a tight end, and the tight end at that time was Pat Hodgson, to run a hook about 10 yards down the field.
Right.
And his job was to catch the ball and then lateral it to a running back, Bob Taylor, who was trailing him. And Hodson kind of bobbled the ball. In fact, I thought he had fumbled, but he shoveled it back to Taylor, and Taylor ran 73 yards for a touchdown. And, of course, we all looked screaming and hollering and yelling, but we had to go for two.
Right.
And we did go for two. Kirby Moore threw a pass in the end zone to Pat Hodson, and we beat Alabama.
Carl, I'm looking at the...
my gosh. Second year as a head coach, we beat Coach Bryant. Well, I was so cocky. Let me tell you, nothing cockier than a 20-something-year-old. We got to the spring SEC meeting, and the year before, I had never met Coach Bryant. And so the year before, I was really shy, and I did not want to get near him because my daddy had talked about him all my life.
Mm.
And so I kept hearing him say, "Barbara," and I wouldn't look at him, and he'd say, "Barbara Dooley," and I still wouldn't look at him. And finally, I turned and I said, "What, Coach?" He said, "Come over here and give old Papa a kiss." Well, the next year, the year we beat him, I just strutted right by him. He was right outside under a palm tree with a group of people. And I said, "Hey, Coach, how you doing?" And I kept walking. He went, "Barbara Dooley, stop." And I turned around. He got up and literally got in my face and said, "Don't ever forget I'm the man that's made your husband famous." Well, Coach Ryan and I became great friends from that day forward.
Wow.
Great story. And Barbara's talking about 64, 65.
The hook and lateral goes for the score, Carl, and it goes for two.
Alabama beats them the year before, and then you return the favor. But it's stuff like that. And Barbara, you talk about Bear Bryant. It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Obviously, we're focused on Georgia and Alabama this Saturday night. But, you know, tell us what kind of man he was. Tell us, you said you guys became friends, because that's something that I don't think a lot of people know. We know about the rivalry. We know about what Vince thought and how well those teams were coached and how many years they went head-to-head. But what kind of guy was Bear Bryant for you?
Well, Bear Bryant loved women. And he made women feel like they were the queen of the day.
Wow.
And he would walk in the hospitality room. We'd all be sitting there, and he'd be looking around, and he'd say, "I just want to tell all of you men that you all got outmarried, every single one of you." I mean, he was one sport, let me tell you. But he was tough, 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 tough. And you knew he was the boss. His secretary, this is a great story. But we'll get back to the game in a minute. But when Vince was coaching at Auburn many years ago, Coach Bryant's secretary wrote a letter to Coach Jordan and said, when we come to Auburn to play or wherever they were playing, he said, "I need an extra cat in every room." Coach Jordan said, "Extra cat." She meant to say cot.
That's great. Barbara Dooley is our guest, guys. We talk to her each and every week. It's brought to you by our friends at Kroger. All right, let's talk about the game on Saturday just briefly here, because just that stuff you're not going to get anywhere else, guys. That's why we love Barbara. Barbara, I was not impressed. I was at the Kentucky game. I was not impressed. Obviously, I don't think anybody was with the way the Dogs played. But Kirby's had a week to get them right. But I
think
the quarterback, like Carson Beck, has got to play a lot better. And I don't want to put it solely on him, because nothing seemed to work, you know, in that game. I mean, the offensive line, nobody was blocking. There were a lot of things that were going wrong. But they've had a week to correct it. But tell me what you think the key is for this Alabama game on Saturday night.
Well, I think that And I don't know that much about football, but it looks like that they're playing. It looks to me like they're playing so conservative.
Yes.
It looks like they're playing afraid to do wonderful long passes, or they're not protecting Carson enough to let him make some big plays. They've got to. But I'll tell you another thing I've watched is this Milroe, the quarterback for Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to pressure him. Let me tell you, he can run. If you screw up his play, he'll run. If you give him too long in the pocket, you don't think he can throw, but he can. He can run and throw, and we've got to remember that. But we also have to remember that we've got to make him uncomfortable. And when you start making a quarterback uncomfortable, they start making mistakes.
The thing about Jalen Milroe, Barbara, was Vince ever a guy, they call it bulletin board material, if somebody on another team said something? Because Milroe basically said that Georgia didn't sign up for 60 minutes of football last year in the SEC championship.
And it's all over the locker room. Are you kidding me? Watch what you say, buddy. You walk in the training room and say, are you ready to play 60 minutes? Melrose doesn't think we can. Oh, yeah. It's in their minds. So it's going to be a great game.
It is. I'm with you.
I think it's going to be a 3-point game.
Mm-hmm. Close.
Right. One way or another.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a big scoring game.
I'm with you. Last year, SEC championship, dogs lose 27-24. It's a three-point game. You know?
3-point game. I'm sick of them. Yeah.
That was Kirby.
I know. Kirby is sick of them. And Kirby, I think he is the best coach in the United States. I really do. That guy has come to Georgia, and his record is on track with Saban's.
Yeah.
It's on track with Vincent's, and it's on track with Coach Bryant. I mean, he's just come in like gangbusters.
You're right. And that's why he is who he is and why the program is maintaining this level of success. Barbara Dooley, we always love talking with you, and it is a big game. Do not hide yourself under the covers. We got to talk about this game next week, all right?
All right, deal. See you then.
Take care.
You got it.
Barbara Dooley here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Wow. How about that Bear Bryant coming up saying, I made your – now, again, we've heard stories about Bear. Like Keith Jackson always told stories, yeah. So they hang out before the games and or after. And, you know, anytime you see those documentaries on Bear, I can never understand what he's saying. It was like, I don't even know. Everything was like, it's really down here.
Down
I guess
low.
Earlier 60s, you could follow along. Barbara with another gem talking about Bear Bryant.
Hey, man, it's Dukes and Bell. We know you are weather aware, as everybody is in the state of Georgia, looking at this potential, you know, hurricane, what it's going to do. I say potential until it hits land. We don't know what's going to happen. But we understand that, man. We're here to help you get through it, all right? Make sure you stay tuned all evening long. We'll have updates and whatnot, and make sure that you're taking the necessary precautions. All right, when we come back, we got an injury update for our Falcons, and you're not gonna like it. You know, there's two things I don't like you playing with. My money and my emotions. And right now, the Falcons are playing with my emotions, Mike. It's Dukes and Bell. Here is the injury update for the Falcons. Bijan Robinson, shoulder. Matthew Judon, hamstring. Jake Matthews didn't practice, and congratulations to Jake. We found out his wife.
Another baby. Remember last time we were going up to Charlotte for the game with the listeners, and then the baby was on the way, and then Arthur flew him in the private plane to make sure he made both the birth and the game. But in this case, another on the way. So his wife, Maggie, is giving birth to her second child. But, yeah, I didn't really notice that Bijan was jammed up. But apparently there's a shoulder issue, and you mentioned Judon. We have an anemic pass rush as it is, and he's the guy brought in here to fix it.
I agree. And that's why I said, stop playing with my emotions.
Yeah.
Caleb McGarry, by the way, update. Knee?
Did not participate today. Remember, we asked Coach Ra yesterday, and I said, you know, is McGarry okay? Because, you know, Storm Norton would be the backup. And he was, I don't know, the way he answered the question kind of gave me a, okay, maybe he's not 100%. So we'll see. But
you think he plays Sunday?
I'm cool with Storm Norton. As long as Storm Norton gets a full week of practice and he's got a rhythm to it, I don't think they were as effective stepping in in mid-game against the Chiefs, certainly, what Spagnuolo was bringing at him. But, yeah, I mean, Saints, you know, they just lost their center. They've got eight other guys on the injury report for this week. So both teams coming in banged up. But it's only Thursday.
It's Thursday. Okay, you're right. It's Thursday.
But it's still, I'm with you. It's. I don't want to hear about Bijan, two of the most important pieces, and Matthew Judon, not 100% on Thursday.
Well, I told Chris and I was like, I don't like hamstring. That when you start saying, like, okay.
Now you can't do what you need to do, and it only gets worse without rest.
I hope that's not the case, but, you know, it's like, oh, what's wrong with him? Hamstring. I hope they just didn't mark that down. I hope it is something less than a hamstring.
Well, Justin Simmons talked to the media today and said, we can't leave that stadium without a win. So I like that.
I do, too.
And hopefully we back that up. Because, this is a 50-50 game.
I like the bravado of Justin Simmons.
He's a leader. I mean, the balls on this team are at safety. I mean, I'm not saying there ain't no more of the balls on this squad. But the dudes who bring the swagger, it's certainly, you know, Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons.
Yeah. All right. So just getting you caught up. More on this coming up in the Falcon Report. We're also going to get a chance to talk to Danny Cannell in the 5 o'clock hour, guys. We'll talk about not only Georgia and Alabama, but the other big games as we start to get into the meat of the college football season. October is here, and this is when we start to get some really, really interesting games and things start to shake out.
Now, we were talking a lot about Carson Beck earlier, just off the heels of our fun conversation with Barbara Dooley. But for what it's worth, now I know the PFF stats, you can take them or leave them because they make us sound like we know what we're doing running the football. We can't get a yard. But as far as Milroe, just real quick, just on the heels of our combo with Barb, Milroe ranks just 45th in PFF passing grades amongst 133 quarterbacks that qualify, even though he's got 8 touchdowns and no picks. So as far as accurate, his completion rate is actually pretty good. So whatever they're looking at, they don't like it. At least he's not elite in the minds of those nerds.
Okay, so here's even more perspective on that. If I told you Alabama was 11th in the SEC in throwing the football at 228 yards a game, who do you think's 10th?
UGA?
Correct.
Yeah, because a lot of that coming off the Kentucky game and the fact you rested your starters in your second game of the season.
256, 228. Neither team is throwing as much as they have in the past. Now, is that a function, to Mike's point, of the schedule, or is that a function of the offenses? Now, for Alabama, here's the thing for me. I'm looking at that and going, that doesn't concern me because they're running the football like crazy. They're 5th in rushing, guys. They're 5th in touchdowns. They're scoring and they're running the ball. That is why I don't think that throwing stat, Mike, you look at that and go 11th in the SEC, they're throwing when they need to. They're not throwing because they have to. And I think that is something where you look at Georgia and you go, all right, well, Georgia's top 5 and throwing the football. No, top 10.
Yeah, and it's just Carson Beck has not been as compelling as we thought he might be, but this is a game where all that will be on his shoulders. And we've talked about the transfers. I mean, stepping up, Lovett and Bell. I mean, you know, this is where the receivers have got to step up. Oscar Delp, we talked about yesterday. You know, I'm like, no one's going to replace Brock Bowers. We get that. But, I mean, the skill positions have got to be the piece. The thing that Alabama does that Georgia doesn't allow is the explosive play. Georgia doesn't allow the explosive play, and Alabama lives with the explosive play. Yeah. So where's that going to give?
Well, something's got to give. I mean, and here's the deal. You know they're going to take their shots and take their chances, especially with this Williams kid. And I don't want to overhype this, but this is a situation where Monday we could be talking about this kid having 2 touchdowns and having an impact on this game. He has impacted every game for Alabama so far this year. And, Mike, to be quite honest, nobody's been able to cover the kid. So if this was 2 years ago, last year with Kamari Lassiter, we said this with Connor Riley, 2 years ago with the secondary and the corners you had, you could literally go, you got him. I don't know if they got that dude. I don't know if they've got a guy like that unless you're just going to zone him up. And that's not what Kirby is about. That's not what they do. So
College game day will be there in Tuscaloosa because obviously it's the big one. We know the former president is going to be there. That's part of the story this weekend. Ryan Williams, you just mentioned, is going to be a big story because everyone's going bananas about a 17-year-old just doing this against elite competition in the SEC. But, yeah, and then the Kirby thing we already talked about, you know, the record against Bama. And then, you know, Kalen DeBoer proving that he's got the juice and he's got the minerals to handle this rivalry and win the big test in the SEC.
Yeah, he's putting his stamp on all these things. We were talking about how things have changed just from, you know, again, when you come in and you go, all right, what was the all-time great doing? Most times coaches just follow kind of in those footsteps. I mean, Mike, you think this is dumb. We don't, but some people will. Saban didn't allow music at practice. Now, I've been to high school practices where it's bumping, and it's just about the vibe. Guess what's happening now? Music is everywhere. They're playing music at practice at Alabama. That may sound like not a big deal, but again, these are just subtle changes that have happened, which, you know, whether it wins or he wins national championships, I don't know. But the point is, he's come in and said, this is how we operate when I'm here.
Since Nick Saban took over, Georgia, by the way, I mean, what, 2007, Nick was with the Dolphins, so 2008 he comes in. Remember, they lost to Monroe, and they were working their way through it?
Monroe.
Right, but, you know, you look at Georgia, and you look at Alabama, and it's Georgia's lost 8 of their last 9 against the Crimson Tide, going back to Mark Richt.
Yeah, it's been tough, and that's what Barber was saying, like, we go there, we go to Tuscaloosa, it's a different deal. Neutral sites, which is, you know, again, when we talk about SEC championship or the college football playoff, those games have been different, but even those games have been a struggle since Kirby's taken over, and that falls into that 1-5 record. But Mike, going to Tuscaloosa has been tough.
I know that, that was Mark Richt did beat Saban in the 2007 season. Georgia won that 26-23 in overtime. That was Nick's first year. It was 2007, so Mark Richt did get a win there. But yeah, it's just you look at Bama and you look at what Georgia's tried to build, and now you know Kirby is. You know, guys, we talk about this every week on the show. We talk about with the elite programs, they got the same stuff. Is Milroe a more special sauce guy in this game with the explosive play than Carson Beck is going to be? That's where it comes down, I think, in the mind of a lot of fans. And who's going to be that superstar on Georgia defense, which has been the difference maker in how they won that national championship against Bama up in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think, though, this defense is more of a sum of its parts than it is star power. Like, that defense, again, go back. You're putting, what, 6, 7, 8 guys in the league, 5 first-round picks. That's a different level than what I think this defense is. But it doesn't mean that it's not good. They've been good.
Mikael Williams should be, again, yes. if we're talking about him, if they're calling his number a lot, then there's your guy.
That's it. If he's healthy.
But he's not 100%.
We don't know. Kirby keeps talking about, I'm hopeful. Well, that doesn't bode well.
And is he just sandbagging? And is there Stackhouse? Then Stackhouse take over.
We're going to see. You mentioned that he spoke to Dan Lanning, talking about this matchup with DeBoer. And coaches change places, guys, but they don't change what they do. A lot of these coaches do the similar things. And you know, most times if you go to a better program, that means you have better players.
Right.
So DeBoer, last year, that was an NFL team he had. I mean, obviously, Penix and all the guys. I mean, you know, talk about Odunze and all these guys. He had a squad. But he comes to Alabama, and you go, what is he going to do differently than he did at Washington? I don't think they're doing anything differently, Mike. It's just whether or not, as you mentioned, are they picking this up quick enough, specifically a quarterback, to do the things he wants to do with the offense. But the Ducks were 0-3 against him. And so Dan Lanning was talking about it. You know, they were talking about Dan Lanning talking with Kirby Smart about this matchup with DeBoer.
We'll get another report coming up. But as of yesterday, 19 hours ago, Mikael Williams was listed as questionable for Georgia, for what it's worth.
All right, man. It's Dukes and Bell. Falcon Report's on the way. We need to give you a pair of tickets. Yeah, because we're nice. To Metallica, M72 World Tour with Pantera and Suicidal Tendencies. These guys are going to be in town next year. It is June 3rd. You got plenty of time to plan. 2025 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We're going to go caller 12 at 404-726-0929. Caller 12 is going to win tickets to go see Metallica. Falcon Report's on the way. Also, our man, Danny Cannell. Mike, what do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
All right, man. Are you ready for the big storm? As Hurricane Helene is bearing down on the Gulf Coast and eventually getting here to Metro Atlanta. Also, TV. Must-see TV. You got to see. I just was talking to Carl about this during the commercial break. New show, which if you like DC comics, which, let's be honest, Carl, sometimes it's a mixed bag when they try to take the Batman franchise somewhere. We'll tell you about the Penguin. It's on the way. Where to play is play. A lot of folks did not make it to work today. Schools closed, Carl, around Metro Atlanta. We just saw less cars today in the lot here where we work at Colony Square. So a lot of folks are already hunkering down. We were just talking during the break today as everybody gets ready for Hurricane Helene. Hopefully some of that energy dissipates and the winds won't be as bad. But, you know, all the models see it around here at around 7 o'clock or so, Carl, passing through Atlanta in the morning. Maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah, and that's when it's going to be, I think, Mike, again, we're not meteorologists, but what we're hearing at its worst, right? I mean, the rain is the rain. The problem is, as many of you know, you've been here, most of you all your life, some of you just got here. all the moisture in the with these trees, man, and you get those winds, Mike, right. That's when it becomes dangerous.
And that's the thing. And I was talking about this with Chris the other day about, yeah, when the ground gets saturated, and I just, you know, Carl, we were just talking during the break. I got a lot of those big, like 100-foot Georgia pines in my neighborhood. And, and I thought last spring about taking them all down, but, you know, we all like the way it looks, the oak trees, the whole shebang. And then you get this. So, yeah, I'm needless to say, you and I are a little distracted, I think, like a lot of folks are today, hoping that we make it through. And again, I think it goes without saying, guys, from all the folks down on the Gulf Coast. We have a lot of friends. I know I got a bunch of buddies in Tallahassee that are going to get a big smack from this storm, South Georgia, and all the way through Metro Atlanta. And then, as we said, hopefully, you know, knock wood, we get through it. But it is a Category 3, is Hurricane Helene. And you've watched the Weather Channel this morning. You saw they've got folks in Valdosta and all over the Gulf Coast and even, you know, here in Metro Atlanta, all the way up to the mountains.
Yeah. Mandatory evacuations in some of those areas, Mike, that you're talking about. The crazy thing is, and again, this cone that we always talk about,
right?
And you know, it could change. And when this storm is so big, when we talk about it change, it's not going to change the effects of what we're going to feel,
right?
Because it's not going 700 or 800 miles away.
It's a very large storm. It's very big, yeah, east to west. Right.
So when you talk about it, could, you know, change course. We're talking about 100 miles, Mike. That doesn't change what we ultimately will feel here in Atlanta.
So again, stay tuned, and again, hopefully, we'll be talking to you tomorrow and not be getting out the chainsaw. Hey, man, a couple of things for you. From starting with a podcast for All the Smoke. Tim Hardaway goes on it and talks about Pat Riley and thinks maybe, just maybe, the relationship with Jimmy Buckets has run its course down in South Florida. Feeling that Riley was sick and tired of hearing Buckets, Jimmy Butler, talking about all the teams that kept advancing in the playoffs while the Heat were sitting at home, and if we were healthy and we were this or that. He also feels that he might be a little bit... you know, in his feels about Tyler Hero as well, running his mouth down there in Miami.
Really?
I did not know. I knew about Jimmy Butler. I didn't know that was a thing.
Huh.
Yeah, during the interview, podcast co-host Stephen Jackson added that perhaps Riley is also tired of Tyler Hero, who has missed a lot of time. He's been on the bench with injuries.
Yeah.
Hardaway said he's probably talking about both of them, but I think he's really talking directly to his star. Said that he had a great relationship with Riley. I'm talking about Tim Hardaway, and it still does, but he says, you know, one thing about Butler, he says he doesn't rule out Jimmy Butler a trade even way before the All-Star break. What about that?
Interesting. Well, we know there was some friction, Mike, at the end of last season. But maybe he's on to something here. I think, listen, if you're Miami and you feel like you still have a chance at a championship, remember, they beat the Celtics two seasons ago and Celtics won it this year. And you felt like, okay, maybe we're a player away. And I don't know, man. They still have Bam. They got some pieces there. I don't know if I'd be willing to move on unless it's just that toxic.
Hey, man, speaking of the NBA, Howard Beck did a breakdown, basically. He used the metaphor of glass. Like, can you see through the glass? Is it stained glass? Is the glass very foggy? And it was kind of a strange way to do it, but it's a big article that he did, senior NBA writer for The Ringer. And Jeff Schultz tweeted, and I read the article today, when he got to the Hawks, the quote was, and just a little bullet points about each NBA team and where they stand, and basically had the Hawks in the same league as like the Raptors and just kind of muddled and not knowing where we're going. Quote, the Hawks had the clarity to finally end the failed Trae Young, DeJounte Murray experiment, parentheses, sending Murray to New Orleans, but they still seem directionless. If anything, they're moving backward.
Interesting. Well, you had the number one pick. You took.
You don't want to ever get caught up into this term, which is called resulting.
No. We're happy with the play-in there, General Manager.
You took the best guy that you thought was available, and I think Rich Hashay is going to show that ultimately I think he's going to be better than Alex Saar, but we'll see. Time will only tell. Mm-hmm. But, Mike, the reason is because we didn't add anything. You kept Dre. You kept Clint. Right. You kept Bogey. It looks like the same thing.
Right.
So how can you say that you've improved?
Yeah, I mean, look, Reese Hoshay is I'm really cool, and I think I'm glad to see Trey is forging a relationship with a guy that hopefully will be the bedrock of the turnaround. But, you know, Jalen Johnson's got to stay healthy. As you always say, find sneakers that, you know, don't roll your ankles in. But for the most part, we're running it back. We're running it back with the same squad. And is Wrestler ever, you know, and if we're really good, if we do get on a heater with this young squad, will Wrestler augment the roster?
The who and the ethos that we want to build.
Yes. Now. Right now, the ethos is playing. We want the ethos to be playoffs. But we'll stay with that. There's a lawsuit brewing now over the Shohei Ohtani 50th home run ball that was caught down in the Marlins Stadium. Legal fight erupting. The guy who eventually got his mitts on the baseball is going to put it up for auction. I think it's going to go for about $500,000. Last week, the Dodger Sluggers, you guys know, made history. If you didn't see it, these fans are out there in like sort of like this entertainment area they've got beyond the home run fence, and people are just hanging around. Max Matas, 18-year-old, has filed a suit against Golden Auctions, plus Chris Balansky, the man who left the stadium with the ball. The young man Matas feels that Balansky wrestled it out of his hands.
Oh, he took it from him.
And this gets back to,
give me that.
What is the rule of law when you get into a scrum like that? Is it like, is it a survival of the fittest? First guy who's got his hands on it? Because now they're saying the rightful owner is Matas, and the ball was taken away from him, quote, via civil battery. And that he should be declared the rightful owner. Now, some would say if someone has performed battery on you, that you need to call the cops and press charges immediately. Henceforth, to give you some legal arguments, some legs here that you're actually going to try to sue this guy.
Is this on tape? Did anybody see this guy get assaulted?
The tape is two knuckleheads going for a baseball, okay. And it looks like fair is fair. It's almost like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah, well, then guess what? I got it. You didn't. Suck it!
Yeah, the kid says his suit, he successfully grabbed the home run ball in his left hand before, quote, a muscular older man proceeded to trap him in between his legs and wrangled the 50-50 ball out of Max's left hand.
Everybody and their mom knew that day that this could happen. And you're telling me that you got beat up for the ball, like you lost your opportunity at this ball?
Yeah, video of the home run showed one fan just missing out and then the scrum. And then, again, it's a scrum, so all bets are off. Real quick, sidebar story. Orin will remember this. Years ago when I worked at the old station, 790, I think it was either a McGuire or a Sosa, maybe one of Barry, it must have Barry Bonds. He was out in San Fran. It was a Barry Bonds, like, 70th home run. Same thing. Two guys are fighting over it. And back in the day, they used to invite us down to do like the CNN Talk Back Live at the old CNN Center. So they invite me down. And so they got a crowd of like basically tourists who have walked into CNN Center. And now you're going to watch an hour-long show.
Sure.
And here I am, like local sports talk host Mike Bell. And so I basically said, they go, Mike, what do you think of this? I go, hey, I don't. So of course I went all ham because Steak had done this a lot. I figured I'll emulate Steak style. All I know is back in school, it's two hands, Barbara.
Oh, jeez.
And, of course, I'm getting booed by the crowd like I'm a WWE heel. That this guy is like a panty waist. And he like, you know, you didn't get it. You dropped it, and that's all she wrote. Which is basically, I'm going to apply the same logic to this. I don't think this kid Matas has a leg or a hand with his ball to stand
no,
on.
No, that's what I said. Is it on tape? Like,
yeah.
If
it's
they
a scrum.
Have it, yes, if they have it on tape where all of a sudden, like, the ball's in his hand, and then the guy grabs the ball and punches him in the face, that's a different deal.
Right.
But either way, I think you came up short, bro. You got to let this go.
Hey, one final nugget for those of us that love Formula One and Drive to Survive. Very popular driver went by the moniker the Honey Badger. So it's not just Tyler, you know, Matthew, but it's actually Daniel Ricciardo loved that nickname.
He did.
And he's out. Red Bull does not play around. Red Bull owns the Red Bull Junior team, the Visa RB team. And they're replacing him with Liam Lawson, the dude that took over for him when he broke his hand last year in the Dutch Grand Prix. So he doesn't get to do like a goodbye or a big farewell tour. He's just out because there's 3 weeks between the Singapore race and the Texas race. Helmut Marko is the dude that runs Red Bull, and he's the one who's always kind of like the puppet master, pulling strings. A lot of folks feel it's a bad way for Danny to go out. A lot of folks in the paddock are over Daniel Ricciardo. A lot of the younger drivers can't stand him.
Do you ever really get a chance to go out on your terms?
Nope.
That's how this is. And I hate it for him because, to your point, but this is what makes F1 interesting.
Right. Red Bull, if you watch Drive to Survive, they did you have like no margin for error. Albon, remember they pulled him out of that chair? For those who don't remember, Ricciardo was number two behind Max. I saw him win Monaco. And then he took a job at Renault. It's like career suicide. He took the wrong job, should have been there. Battled with Max. Anyway, a great career, couple of seven wins, including Monaco, but Daniel Ricciardo, his F1 career is over. And the segment's over. That's Guy Talk, brought to you by Dukes and Bell. Hey, man, Ale.
Danny Cannell's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk some college football with him. But before we get to that, one of the biggest stars in the NFL got some bad news.
Oh, snap.
We're going to tell you about it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.